When I first got my Joppa beads in 1970 or 71, I got Hari Nama initiation. And there were the little red beads that used to come off of the curtain material. And on the day of initiation, there were no beads. And there was, I think there was 15 devotees getting initiation right now. So we all pooled our beads into one place. And Srila Prabhupada chanted on those beads. You know, and I got, and then you got somebody else's beads. You know, you'd see so-and-so chanting on these beads for the last 6 months you're in the temple in Los Angeles, but then you ended up with his beads as your initiated beads. See, there were no new beads, so everybody just pooled their beads. And there were wood beads and maybe some tulsi. I think there was some tulsi beads from India and some neem, and there were these curtain beads. Well, I ended up with the curtain beads. They're all the same size, little red ones. That's great. Those were initiated beads. Well, in 1982, somebody stole my briefcase in the Chicago Temple. My beads were in the briefcase, so my beads were stolen. And then, and of course, I got some other beads right away. But later on, there is this principle in Vaishnavism: try to keep yourself in the descending line as far as much as possible. I was mentioning something about serving yourself prasada. You see, that doesn't work as well as being served prasada by a Vaishnava, a higher Vaishnava, your guru or something like that. An example is Arjuna couldn't put his own armor on. If he did that, the armor wouldn't have any effect. He had to be dressed. And when he was pretending to be a eunuch, then he had to pretend like, why did he put this stuff on? And he had this armor, and he tricked the king into putting it on, because if he took his armor and he put it on, it had no effect. So that's the way blessings are. You can't go steal the blessings, actually. You might steal Mahaprasadam from how we used to do in LA, break the lock and steal the laddus or something, but most people who did that had real sense problems in time. Somebody said he stole his ticket back to God and this and that, but actually when he got up to the gate, they said, where did he get his ticket? So, you know, those are just encouraging things. But actually, you cannot steal this type of thing. What's his name? Who was the archer? And he became the illegitimate disciple of Dhanacharya. Ekalavati. And then he had to lose his thumb. See, previously, arrows were shot like this. You grab the thing like this. And when you shoot a bow, you can have what's called a perfect release by this. Perfect. You just go like this. But when you shoot like this, to some degree, your fingers can't get out of the way of that string fast enough. It might be to the millisecond, but you cannot perfectly release a bowstring like this. Now, these professional archers that shoot in competition, there's a release mechanism. They have a trigger, and that trigger holds the string this way, and it just opens up, and the string goes. So Ekalavadya is the one who developed this way of shooting afterwards, because he lost his thumb. That's why he had to sacrifice his thumb, because then he couldn't pull the bow. So then he went to this method. This is considered in archery inferior. This is the perfect release. Anyway, why he lost his thumb? Because he went to Guru through this ascending process and got the knowledge and everything illegitimately through an ascending process. In the end, he had to lose it. There are many stories like this in the Vedas where someone deceived the guru or the acharya and got knowledge, and then later, okay, he got the knowledge. Now that guru, that rishi, curses him. There are quite a number of stories like that. So everything divine and everything knowledge should actually be received descending, and then there's an assurance. Because there's the goodwill of the teacher and the giver comes along with that. And that's all important in success. So, there's a thing that if you lose your beads, or they're stolen or something like that, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, you don't just go to the market and buy new beads and start chanting again. Now, when that happens practically, you go to Vrindavan and find somebody who lost their beads. Young or old. They got a new pair of beads. I can tell you what they did with them. They did one of three things. They went to the Jamuna and dumped them in the Jamuna. or they went to the Jari and asked them to touch into Prabhupada's feet in the Samadhi. They do something. So that's their innis. You don't just take the beads and chant. You do something to sanctify that. So if you go to Jamuna, it means you're going to Shantaras. You're getting your beads blessed in Shantaras section. Maybe Prema, but Shanta Prema, right? And that's okay. We do that. But better is, well, if you're going to do that, go to Radhakund. That's Madhurya. Madhurya Prema. Anyway, the point is people do that. Well, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, from the time of Bhaktisiddhanta, then beads would be given to him, and he would chant on the beach. And if their guru wasn't there or present, then a senior Vaishnava, even a godbrother, would chant on the beads. The point is, everything should be descending, not ascending. If you give up your mantras, technically, you should receive your mantras again, not just get the paper and start reading them again. And the example is an example in Chaitanya Bhagavata. It's explained pretty much in detail. Gadadhara Pandit lost the potency of the mantras because he initiated Balabhacharya. Then there was no more potency in the mantras. He approached Mahaprabhu and asked Mahaprabhu if Mahaprabhu would reestablish him in the mantras, again give him the mantras. The mantras being uttered from one who is in the flow, who has a connection. Actually, he's the dynamo, so that would have been even better in a sense. But Mahaprabhu told him, no, it won't look good. Your guru is here in Bengal, Pundarik. And anyway, he's coming here in a few months for Ratha Yatra. He will reinitiate you when he comes. And when he came, Gadadhara Pandit again received the Gayatri mantras from his guru, because the potency was lost because he gave them to an unqualified person. So these people will go out and just initiate people in park gatherings and just let the mantras and everything fly. They're probably going to have problems with their devotional service, externally or internally or both. Because if you give things to unqualified people, that's an offense. And Gadadhara Pandit, he gave mantra to Balabhacharya, and that constituted an offense, because Balabhacharya was not qualified. Anyway, so he didn't just, you know, do some tapas and again start chanting. He went to a source to again receive his mantra. So, I'm not trying to build a case, I'm just telling you, that is the case. Mm-hmm. Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the time, and I remember in Denver, we wouldn't even wear clothes, dhotis or anything, unless they were first offered to Jagannath. I don't know who started that, how it got started, but we used to buy the cloth, offer it to the deity, and then saris and dhotis, everything, we wear things like this. And I found in the writings of Bhaktivinoda, he says, I will not wear any cloth that is not a remnant of Lord Jagannath.
Mm-hmm. Krishna Prabhupada told us to do that. When I do cloth.
Yeah.
Often.
Yeah. So even your cloth will be, everything will come down to you. The tilak we wear is from a sacred place. You know, okay, and we used to have Elmer's glue and the foolish earth. And,
yeah.
Whatever, and all kind of mixy-ups there, and okay, you did what you did, but then in the end, got rid of that and got the real thing, you know. So there's all these things. So anyway, so there I was one year, and we grew these tulsis in our garden, and in Vrindavan we had someone spin them into beads. Then I was on my way back to South India, and we stopped for darshan with Srila Puri Maharaj. So I thought, this is a nice opportunity. Srila Puri Maharaj can chant on my beads. So I gave my beads to his servant. Servant took them in, gave them to Srila Puri Maharaj. A couple hours later, a servant came into my room and said, Srila Puri Maharaj has your beads. He'll give you your beads now. I said, that's nice. So I went in his room, and he was lying on his bed. If you've seen pictures, how he used to be propped up on his bed. And he had the beads in his hand. He was holding them like this. After my basis, and I turned and he looked at me and he goes, oh, it's you. And I said, yes, Maharaj, it's me again. So he gave me the beads, and someone took a picture. Uh-oh. And I'm getting these beads from Srila Puri Maharaj. You know, I'm 55 years old, and I'm getting my japa beads from Srila Puri Maharaj. So we made sure that that picture never got out of our ashram, because it would have been scandalous on the internet. People would have said I got reinitiated or something. So then, we talked about that, how people would see this, they'd think, wow, I got reinitiated, or someone would turn it into a scandal, right? And I said, no, let me turn it into the scandal. So I started saying, you know what it is with me? I got Harinam from Srila Puri Maharaj. I got Gayatri from Srila Sridhar Maharaj. And I took sannyas from Srila Prabhupada. That's actually what it is with me. Now you figure it out. I did. And it's quite peculiar. Actually, I received all those things from Srila Prabhupada. Harinam, Gayatri, sannyas. But with Srila Puri Maharaj, we learned a lesson about the holy name of Krishna, which was very sublime, very, very divine. And anybody who associated with Srila Puri Maharaj experienced the inspiration which would come towards the holy name. And I got specific instruction from him one day. He turned to me and said, Baba, you must chant 64 rounds a day. And we make so many excuses why we can't do that. But the order of Mahaprabhu, Bhakti Vinod, and Bhakti Siddhanta is chant 64 rounds a day. So since I got that instruction, I've only chanted 64 rounds a day about 4 times. I'm still making excuses. Preaching, service, doing so many things. But I got this instruction. And I never got instruction from Prabhupada to chant 64 rounds a day. But he told me to chant 64 rounds a day. So you follow? So I got Harinam. Instruction about Harinam from Srila Prabhupada. Now you understand. I'm just turning this, what could be scandalous, into something positive. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Then Gayatri. Actually, we all chanted Gayatri for many years and thought that Gayatri was the worship of the sun or the worship of Surya Narayan. But when I received the Gayatri commentary, Nigudartha, from Srila Sridhar Maharaj, then I understood Gayatri is the fruit of Krishna and it worships Srimati Radharani. So in that way, I got Gayatri from Srila Sridhar Maharaj. And sannyas, as we saw in the film yesterday, I got from Srila Prabhupada in 1976. So then, there's a story though. This isn't just some thing I'm making up. There's a story. The guru took sannyas from his disciple. It's like a proverb in Bengal. The guru took sannyas from his disciple. Now, if I leave you with that and you have to write an essay, probably you won't make it through. You won't be able to write the essay. This is a proverb in Bengal, a Vaishnava proverb. It goes like this. There was a guru, and he used to give his discourses, and his disciples were gathered. In part of his discourses, he preached about the temporary nature of the material world, the fallibility of this body that could fall in the hands of death at any minute, and the importance of the goal of life dedicated in one's life. And this preaching entered his one particular disciple who then resolved to live a life of renunciation and abstain from all kind of engagements in the material world so that he could put all of his energy to fulfilling what his guru was talking about. So he went to a renunciate in the nearby village and received the dress and the status of renunciation. That you can't take sannyas from a householder guru. It's never accepted in any of the sampradayas. Even if your guru is a householder and you want to be a sannyasi and he wants you to be a sannyasi, you have to take sannyas from somebody else. The householder cannot give sannyas. So he took sannyas. Then he came back to his guru to listen to his... Now, that doesn't mean he had the modern-day tree dandy and everything, but he had the water pot and discarded the opulent clothes of the pleated dhoti and the nice chatter, and he was just in the humble rags of a renunciate. And he came to hear his guru. And his guru said, what is this? What has happened to you? And then he told him, I have heard all these things from you. And he began to tell his guru what he understood from his talks and how this had motivated him to such a degree of sincerity that he wanted to embrace this life of renunciation and do nothing else henceforth in his life. And the guru said, you have got such a thing from me? Please, I want that also. And he took sannyas from his disciple. It's a Bengali proverb. You follow? So, sometimes things work in reverse. Problem is, we don't think we got anything from anybody else. But the fact is, if I tried and spent the time, I could write about the many things that I got in devotional service from my God brothers and God sisters throughout life. And some of them themselves aren't even here anymore in Krishna consciousness. But actually, I got something from them of value that's of value today as I practice Krishna consciousness as Prabhupada's servant. What to speak of? Some something from someone who's a god brother, who I should respect as great as Prabhupada in certain ways, and who has realization and experience, something I must get of value from him. So then I said, I took Harinam from Srila Purim Maharaj, I got Gayatri from Srila Sridhar Maharaj, I took Sannyas from Prabhupada. But chronology, this is backwards, isn't it? And it's not humanly possible. Well, what's it all mean up there? And there's no explanation because they don't even know what that up there is about, vaguely. So it comes down to that such kind of, you know, evolutions in people are due to their sour grapes experiences and their having a strong intellectual capacity in this world, that they can read a lot of books and try to learn a lot of things. And even at best, because the books are the books. I mean, those aren't ordinary pieces of paper. And what's written on them is far superior. You could burn the books of the world. The world would flourish behind these books. But when that's all you have, you are the books that have come down to you, and then from then on, you're on the ascending platform. And you can never surpass Namabhas. You can never surpass that middle stage. If you can even get to Madhyamadhikari, it's questionable. And knowledge, and the ability to speak, and so many things are not what puts us there. The gradation is through faith, through Shraddha. A Kanishadhikari doesn't have hardly any faith. He just believes the gods and the deity. He doesn't believe in the Vaishnavas, or he only believes in one Vaishnava, his guru. That's a Kanishadhikari. A Madhyamadhikari has a plural vision, which is expanded because of his faith. He understands that Krishna is in the heart of the Vaishnavas, that serving the Vaishnava is more pleasing to Krishna than directly serving him. And there's Kanishna Madhyamadhikari, Madhyam Madhyamadhikari, and Uttam Madhyamadhikari. It means there's gradation even in the middle class. And that's a long, long journey. And then there's Uttam Adhikari. And the highest level of Madhyamadhikari is almost the same as Uttam Adhikari, except for this one factor is found, that the Uttam Adhikari can defeat many opposing conceptions that come to challenge pure devotional service. Whereas a Madhyamadhikari, pure devotee even, pure devotee, guru, not necessarily guru, devotee, Vaishnava, may not have the Shastra to defeat opposing, but he knows, his faith is like, no, this is not right, this is not good, this is not friendly. He knows, but can't deal with it, doesn't have the background, doesn't have the scriptural knowledge. The difference between a guru and an acharya is also that way. A guru, just generally a guru, he knows the scripture and knows the conclusion of the scripture and has an intuitive sense for the truth and the path. It's like going with somebody in the forest. He doesn't have a map, but he knows by which way the wind blows and where it's this way. Whereas an acharya, a big acharya, has extensive knowledge of the scripture. He's got the detailed map. At this tree, go left. At this, cross this tree. Through 30 steps to the left, go here. Very extensive knowledge of the scripture. But in terms of faith and their intuition, they're almost the same. And what is a big, glaring defect in a lot of these people, devotees, as well-intended as they are, they have a tremendous lack of faith. They don't believe in Vaishnavism. They don't believe in other Vaishnavas. And that means Kanishtha. So we cannot learn from the Kanishtha. We cannot take the documentation of the Kanishtha for the progress of the Krishna consciousness movement. We should try to come to the higher devotees, at least those who have practiced well and understood, and ideally if we can find devotees who have realization. And that's where you find Prabhupada's disciples who heard from Srila Sridhar Maharaj and from Srila Purim Maharaj coming home or being around and having a contribution to make to Prabhupada's movement in times of difficulty. Difficulty means the sahajiyas, and difficulty means the other sampradayas attacking us and many things, because these things they brought from their lessons with those great souls. And that becomes then complementary. And it is, it's a welcome thing. But But just to say we'll go to the old books, our old books for the answers. You know, we used to say, yeah, the question, it seems like anywhere I open the book, there's an answer. Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you want to try me, I'll give you questions all day long on a paper. I'll give you plenty of time to answer them. And you're going to struggle like anything to find the answers to these questions. And they're not just like twisted to the point that it's just like a game. No, they're just valid questions that you can ask in Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, remember, we couldn't ask a question, you know. You know, in the West, in a college, you always get that question, you know, why do you have paint on your face? You know. So when I go to a college, I don't wear a tilak. I got tired of answering that stupid question. So I go to the college and I don't wear a tilak. I don't have to answer that question. And Prabhupada used to give a class about the three modes of material nature, and someone would then ask the question, how big is Vaikuntha? He would say, questions should pertain to the class. And in the end, he hardly accepts questions. Right? Isn't it? I guess those who were with him in early days, it was a little more, you know, a little more sweet, and there was opportunity, and there were plenty of crazy questions. There were plenty of crazy people around. So these things are not a good, they're not a good proposal. The sentiment is laudable and can be understood to a point, but the sentiment then cannot omit the established process. It cannot obstruct the descent of divinity. It can't be allowed. Same thing was thought of in the time of Bhaktivinoda. People said, we have his books. What do we need? The end conclusion was, if you don't have Bhaktisiddhanta, you don't connect to Bhaktivinoda. Unless you're already his disciple. And even many, not just a couple, many of Bhaktivinoda's disciples, they understood that they'll be sheltered in Bhaktivinoda by serving Bhaktisiddhanta. There were many. And this Pradeep Tirtha, he was the first one to take sannyas from Bhaktivinoda. And he took second initiation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in the presence of Bhaktivinoda. And he writes about it in an article. We have recently acquired that article in Bengali. There was a book written by Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples, the early ones, and they gave their various accounts. It was kind of like to argue against those who were saying, you don't need Bhaktisiddhanta, you can just have Bhaktivinoda, or he's not bona fide, and he's not really connected to Bhaktivinoda, others are actually the guru. And they wrote their articles, and Pradeep Tirtha, he wrote the article how he received mantra diksha, means Gayatri mantra, from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, in the presence of Bhaktivinoda. Bhaktivinoda was sitting there, and he had Bhaktisiddhanta give him mantra, second initiation. So he's saying, you say he's not authorized. In the living presence of Bhaktivinoda, I received mantra from Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta. So, and then there was the incidents where one person, I may have been from Srila Purimaraj's village, but he also mentions the affair. Gaudiya Mutt was preaching, and Bipin Bihari was still living, and formerly Bhaktivinoda had diksha from Bipin Bihari. So this person, he went to the village where Bipin Bihari was, and he got initiation. And he got Siddha Pranali initiation. He's from a Brahmin family. He got Siddha Pranali initiation, etc. So he came back to his village where Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples were. And he then established himself, actually, I am godbrother of Bhaktivinoda. So not necessary for me to surrender to Bhaktisiddhanta, who's a disciple of Bhaktivinoda. I'm godbrother of Bhaktivinoda. I took diksha from Bipin Bihari. He just went, bah. Literally just went, get out of the way, sit down. They just literally didn't pay him any regard whatsoever, and they just kept preaching to him. Lastly, I guess he came to the position to realize his mistakes. Then he joined Bhaktisiddhanta's mission. Later he became a sannyasi. There's pictures of him, and he was a really big guy. He was like became like a bodyguard sannyasi from Bhaktisiddhanta. You see him standing behind him. Huge, like 6'3" guy, really big guy. Big size guy. Bharati was his name. Bharati Maharaj. He's, you know, what to speak of Ritvik, or what to speak of, you know, just think, you know, he had a situation where Bhakti Siddhanta was still living. And Prabhupada was living. And you were preaching. And then the boy or girl from the people who you're preaching to goes around you, goes around Prabhupada and gets initiation from Bhakti Siddhanta. And then that's not accepted by any of you. I mean, it seems like it could never happen. It's just a weird thing. Impossible. But that was the situation. They were all present in one time. And a lot of these shenanigans went on. People trying to jump over, go around, all these things. It wasn't accepted. And not that it just wasn't accepted by a bunch of fanatical disciples, like you could have, you know, some disciples of some guru from India nearby, and they're so fanatical that you have to accept him, and you can only be, you know, go be through him, or whatever. It wasn't like that. Very sober people, direct disciples of Bhakti Vinod, who were themselves already 65 and 70 years old, experienced, very educated in Vaishnavism, highly cultured, from distinguished families, they accepted, this is the line. Get in the line. You can't go round by all these shenanigans. And so it's a little different, but it's quite the same, all these things. The devotee presented a paper similar to this Follow the Lake after the disappearance of Bhakti Siddhanta in a big meeting. And it was such a well-presented paper that even the senior disciples, including Tirtha Maharaj, Tirtha Maharaj from Yogapi, Tirtha Maharaj, what is it, Vilas Tirtha Maharaj, was so presented, it just like turned the scale of like how the mission will run. And the suggestion was there will be no gurus. We have the books and our divine master. And it was filled with great attachment, love, affection, appreciation, and it was so well done and kind of documented. At the end of the man's speech, the talk to the devotees, there was some Vaishnava applause, you know, like that. And Tirtha Maharaj turned to Sridhar Maharaj and said, "What do we say now?" It's like, I'm miffed. The next speaker was Srila Sridhar Maharaj. So he began his talk and praised the qualities of this devotee, his dedication to his guru, and all that was laudable in that. And then he just wound it up and saying, "But we are not Sikhs." And everybody just caught it, including that man, that what you say is true. What I have said is Sikh doctrine. These sentiments cannot block the flow of divinity. They cannot then reject the flow of the descent of divinity. We have to be open for these things and not try to block the flow here with our experience. And they went on, including that person. I don't know which one it was, but it was told to me. So they went through these things. Rameshwar Prabhu was the first one who proposed a Ritvik philosophy, and he came. No, actually, he didn't come. He sent Sudhir Goswami, who went to Srila Sridhar Maharaj way back there, I don't know, 1980 or 81. And Sudhir Goswami, I've listened to the conversation, I've read the transcripts of it also. He explained that Rameshwar Prabhu, Rameshwar Maharaj at that time said, and basically I'll just pretend like I'm saying it to Srila Sridhar Maharaj, that Rameshwar Maharaj does not feel himself qualified to accept disciples. Although Prabhupada has given this order, he doesn't, in those days that was just accepted Prabhupada gave that order. So there, in any case, they have to do that. So that's another topic. But he said, Prabhupada has given this order and he's appointed these men and he's accepting disciples, but he doesn't feel qualified to do that. And he feels more comfortable with, he can just initiate people on Srila Prabhupada's behalf. And this was explained very thoroughly to Srila Sridhar Maharaj by Sudhir Goswami. Sudhir, what was his name?
Dhirakrishna.
Dhirakrishna. So, Srila Sridhar Maharaj said, yes, his sentiments are laudable. Laudable means they're praiseworthy sentiments, he says. But we cannot be a cheater. We cannot be a cheater. To do that is cheating. And he explained how his Guru Maharaj explained the same thing. He said, the guru cannot do these things and then run away from the chair and say, well, actually, I'm not your guru, he is. If you're doing these things, then you're their guru. He said, and he explained that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said something, should when giving the disciples second initiation and giving Guru Mantra and Guru Gayatri, which is the worship of Guru, should he then run from the chair and then say, well, it's actually not me, it's him? He said, this is cheating. He said, the sentiments are perfectly in line. Now do your duty. With those sentiments at heart, now do your duty. It's like something like becoming a parent. You have to become a parent for the right reasons. You have to marriage for the right reasons. If you don't, the whole thing's hell. It's chaos. If this googly-eyed love and all this is the basis of marriage, well, that wears thin, as you all know in time. But if duty and responsibility is the foundation, although love may be involved there, but if the foundation is duty and responsibility, then when that, you know, external beauty charm wears off, you'll continue. Because duty is there as a foundation. Duty is superior. And so, with certain sentiments, the guru goes forward. And those sentiments should be, he does not feel worthy of the cause. He does not feel qualified to do this. But on the order of his guru, and with the backing of his guru, and the backing of Mahaprabhu, and the order of Mahaprabhu, he will do his duty. So he was the first one to come up with a Ritvik philosophy. Then it was harmonized that the seat could be a little smaller, and that would be acceptable. So Shriramaras thought, well, yes, of course, that is acceptable. He didn't have really an idea what Prabhupada's Vyasasans were. And in the beginning, they asked him, should there be a seat? Prabhupada had a seat. In all the temples, there was a seat. So then, Shriramar said, yes, there may be an elevated seat for the speaker, for the guru, who is there, and he would speak very loftily about it, who is there to represent Krishna, who will be his agent there, he will have a seat. He didn't mean a throne. If you've ever seen his seat and the other seats, they were very just the seat. You'd have a seat. Of course, you give him a seat, and then it turned into a throne. And they were of equal size and grandeur. And the whole thing went on for years, the period of, what's it called, simultaneous Guru Puja. And the philosophies that went with it. And then he came to know about what was going on. He said, yes, Vyasasans, from the ocean to the sea. No, from the mountains to the sea. And there was a period of time where consciousness was just about how big your seat was. And was it as good as Bhagavan's? There were even Vyasa Puja books published where people called up and said, can you make it a hardbound if you would? I heard so-and-so's got a hardbound. I mean, just, you know, ridiculous things. And you saw it. And all these things, and all these things were, well, it's for preaching, it's to fire up the devotees, and in the end it didn't fire up the devotees, it destroyed the devotees. And these were deviations from the very beginning. Some very good instruction and advice. Friendly, uncle-ish advice from the uncle was given. And had we followed that, we'd be in a much better position today. Today is kind of closer in many ways to what that was. I mean, once one of my disciples reported that in a Sunday feast that coincided with the Vyasa Puja of a guru, his charnamrita from his foot wash was then taken around and poured in the sweet rice. And I said, let me tell you what, God will curse you and you burn in hell forever. First, you don't take, even if it was a closed circuit TV show, you don't take your guru's foot wash and pour it in Krishna's sweet rice. You might think it's all super nectar, but he'll think it's an offense. If you went to touch through the four marches feet, once we have it on film, there was a devotee kid, he was about 16 or 17, had his hand in his bead bag. And there were some devotees leaving the darshan, so it kind of spontaneously formed a little line. They were just coming to the end and touching Srila Purimaraj's feet and going. When this boy got up there, Srila Purimaraj leaned forward and said something to him. And he went forward, and there was this little discussion between this boy named Navadvip, who was my disciple, and Srila Purimaraj, and everybody's like, him? How's he talking to Srila Purimaraj? You know? And then, He they put some water on his hand, and he washes his hand, and then he touches Srila Purim Maharaj's feet, and he came out. So when he came out, everybody goes, well, what was that all about? He said, he told me to wash my hands. You know? He told me to wash my hands. And then I understood, oh yeah. He saw you had your hands on Tulsi. So you had the dust of Tulsi on your hands. Now you're going to go right over and touch his feet. He didn't want you to do that. Mm-hmm. He wanted you to wash your hands first. You see? Then you could touch his feet. So, how are you going to know that from the books? Mm-hmm. Oh, you can hear the Prabhupada story where he said, don't merge it. Remember? People were merging. Somebody says, yeah, what do I do with the rice and subject? Just merge it. Prabhupada shouted, merge never. So you can pick up the little things from stories. But maybe you never heard that story. I heard it long back, but maybe you don't know. And you're just merging prasadam with the leftovers. Merge never. We don't merge. It's not all one. How do you know? So there are just many things that can't be learned from books, period. And some of the things we learned are learned from practical experience. That is also there. And in time, that becomes shastra. It depends. For example, what you know now as Chaitanya Charitamrita will be an Upanishad in the next millennium. When there's creation again, it will come back. It will be an Upanishad. It won't be known as, it won't be as it is today. And then a bazillion from there, maybe it will be a Purana. A few bazillion after that, and it will be lost. It will be forgotten again. And then will come another round of the Yugas, and Mahaprabhu will descend again. It gets lost completely. It appears now as Chaitanya Charitamrita, and a certain distance from now it will be an Upanishad, a certain distance from now it will be a Purana, a certain distance after that it gets lost. And a certain distance after that, the Lord comes again and reestablishes. Go bring on the Yugas.